Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Now it is time to pivot, to become agents of change. Join us each week as we provide relevant content for the economic developers' pivot from reaction to renaissance. We believe that when leaders get stronger, communities thrive.
Welcome, everybody. It is officially C2 o'clock wherever you are across this great country, and we're excited to be here with you for another Friday. On today's call, we have the pleasure of having Ann Peterson with us, who is a site consultant with Atlas Insight. And so we have some questions put together for Ann. Before we dive into a discussion with Ann, I did want to remind everybody and just check in with everybody. I know last week on our call, for those of you that were with us, we Consultant Connect released an economic developer guidebook, leadership guidebook that had some information in it on key questions that you may want to ask in specific areas of your business, including how you're handling your stakeholders, all the way to, you know, re-onboarding your teams as you go back into your offices together, and all the way down to how you are kind of managing your own career and your own energy during this time. And so I just wanted to remind you of that resource. If you didn't get a chance to download it, I hope you do. We'll put the link in the chat box. And would just love to hear your feedback on that. If there were things that we missed, if there were other questions that you had, just your thoughts on that would be really helpful as we continue to try to provide useful tools to you all. If any feedback that you have helps us to get better as a team. So would love to hear your thoughts on that. And then also we have our leadership circles that are going to be in the Zoom format, but are really focused on specific leadership topics. And I highly encourage you to check those out. I know in that guidebook, we talked about how, you know, energy as a leader is so important, and burnout during this time is going to hit many people, and especially economic developers that have been at the front of this crisis and are facing some pretty serious budget uncertainty, and certainly dealing with a lot of political pressure in many cases. And it may seem like you don't have time to think about how you're responding to change or how you're handling things like resiliency and your own leadership, but you being at the helm of many teams and really impacting your community in such a powerful way, I encourage you to be selfish for a minute and take a look at those small leadership coaching circles. I think you'll really benefit from those and get to know some other people and hopefully fill your cup a little bit so that you're prepared as we continue to go the rest of the way into 2020, that you're prepared for when things do really start picking back up with projects and as your team begins to navigate working together in the office and what that means, that change of going from remote to back together. All of those changes are significant for us as humans and certainly for teams. So we're going to go ahead and dive into conversation with you, Ann. I know our team is pretty familiar with you, but I know there's many people on the call that may not be as familiar with you. So if you could just introduce yourself to kick things off, and then I have questions, but I know the audience certainly has questions too.
Excellent. Well, hi, everyone. I'm Ann Peterson. I'm a director with Atlas Insight, which is a full-service site selection and incentives compliance firm. We are based in New Jersey, and I'm sure many of you know my partners, Brian Cord and Kathy Musio, pretty well-known in the industry. So, you know, right now we just have it. I mean, it's been compliance season, but I think just with everything going on, we've been really heavily focused on compliance for our clients. So not that the site selection work has gone away completely, but compliance has really been kind of right top of mind for us right now in our clients. So I'm looking forward to your questions and having conversation today.
So Kathy or Ann, our first question for you.
I don't even look like Kathy. Come on.
No, I know. you said Kathy, and I was thinking about Kathy. I wonder how Kathy's doing. Anyways, Ann, before we dive into like the business side, I think you know, as economic developers, we're curious, you know, you traveled quite a bit. And how does it feel to, like, what's the life of a site selector like when you're not on the road?
It's weird. my last flight was March 15th. So just like everyone else, I'm hanging in there, and I say, you know, it has been quite the adjustment transitioning from being constantly on the road to being confined to the four walls of my house and my yard. My dog's never been so happy. My kids have never been so well fed. My garden looks great. My house is super clean. But you know, it's definitely been an adjustment, but I will say, you know, the one thing for me, I think this industry, especially because we are on the road so much, we are providing, you know, such high level and pretty intense services to our clients, and projects can just, once you get in a project, I mean, it just, the work can just be so intense and consuming. So it's been sort of nice, honestly, just to slow down and spend some real time with people and not always kind of be chasing and being able to actually relax at home versus always kind of thinking about, okay, where am I going next week? What do I need to pack? What do I need to do?
So you kind of mentioned at the beginning that you have been doing a lot of work with companies for compliance. How are, you know, the companies that you were kind of in the middle of projects with, has everybody pretty much put everything on hold? What's kind of your feeler of, like, do you think projects are going to return and when?
So some companies have definitely put their projects on hold. I'm mostly talking about my industrial clients right now, because, you know, the people that we have been working with, their top priority is making sure that their employees are safe. So securing PPE, putting new safety and training guidelines in place to protect their employees. That's really their top priority right now. And so it just leaves very little time for the decision makers at the client level to concentrate on much else. I will say our food and beverage projects, for the most part, are still moving ahead and will likely reach a site location decision by the end of 2020. But we haven't had any projects, you know, canceled altogether. So most projects have only delayed the decision-making timeline, but they're still moving forward. They're just in various states of either hold or delay. You know, we're really fortunate that many of our clients are either in essential industries or they support essential industries. So they're feeling the effects of the pandemic a little bit less than others, I guess. But in addition, you know, so many of our clients who were in the process of making site location decisions, they were doing so because they were already at a production deficit. And so, you know, I really believe that for a lot of them, the new requirement is going to move forward sort of no matter what.
What is your team, as you kind of think about the rest of this year and into next year, what's your team kind of watching, like in terms of trends or in terms of like long-term impacts? Like what are the discussions if we were sitting in a room with you and Brian and Kathy, and you are all sharing kind of your, you know, global view of what could be coming, what are you kind of watching for?
So I'll just sort of like start with the work piece. I mean, I think I mentioned compliance, and, you know, my team and I are prepared for just an onslaught of compliance related work. Our compliance director, Eric Dantzler, you know, he's not as much forward facing in the industry as far as industry events go, so you might not be as familiar with him, but he and his team is one of the best in the business that I've encountered, and they've already been fielding just numerous requests from companies we've never worked with before and existing clients that are currently in the compliance and maintenance cycles. And I think that the reality, unfortunately, is that most companies and projects are going to find themselves in a statutory shortfall. But I really think that those states, who have sort of taken to heart the advice that we as site consultants have been sort of hammering on over the years, so building flexibility into their programs, those communities should be able to find a way to renegotiate incentive agreements that, and that may mean including telecommuting workers, looking at statewide numbers versus facility numbers, shifting measurement periods, things like that. But those communities, to the extent that they have some flexibility to work with, should be able to renegotiate incentive agreements in a way that's win-win for both sides. As far as, industry trends and sort of what we're looking at and focusing on, I think, and this is not a new thing. I'm sure you guys have heard this before, but for those companies who had already become, because this has sort of been a trend, I think, in the last 5 years. So they've companies who've already become sort of disenchanted with offshoring due to logistics and transportation costs, and more recently with, just great uncertainty around tariffs. I think onshoring is just a trend that's going to continue. And it's something that I think we're only going to see being intensified post-pandemic. So for manufacturing, I think, we are really going to see a shift, a significant shift to people onshoring to North America, and particularly in Mexico. So I really think that's one to watch. So those border communities in Mexico, I think, are really going to be hot for manufacturing. From a logistics standpoint, I'm really watching the grocery store chains and the technology and automation that they implement. Are they going to go the kind of big box full automation like we've seen from a Kroger, or are they going to shift to I don't know where I read this term, but like a nano distribution model with many small facilities that are basically in their customers' backyards to accommodate, same day deliveries and things like that. But I really think that the e-commerce model is going to continue to be disruptive disrupted, but I think it'll be interesting to see how communities repurpose large blocks of what I believe are going to be vacant industrial space coming up here pretty soon, or retail space, sort of much like we saw with how communities would repurpose retail space for call centers, in the last 5 or 10 years. So I think, there's going to be sort of a glut of available existing space. So whether or not companies with new automation and new technology can actually take advantage of existing space, that's, I think, really going to be the question.
You talked a little bit about incentives when you're talking about compliance and the need to kind of renegotiate some of those for some companies that may have been in the middle of a project. What are your thoughts about incentives in general? I know that we've heard from a couple other site consultants, and there's kind of been a buzz of making sure that your incentives are in line with kind of the new reality and are really flexible. What are your thoughts? I know you've had a long history of incentive negotiation. If a community was maybe falling short on incentives before, what should they be doing in order to get their incentives up to par for what companies will need as they begin to, relook at those projects that they're hoping to close in 2020 or in early 2021?
Yeah, so a couple things. First of all, I think, before any of this went down, I've been saying that I think incentives in particular were sort of on the precipice of big change, because even before this, the way that companies were staffing facilities, the way that they were using talent, the way that they were investing was changing. And incentive programs that were solely focused on high wage, high value job creation were not necessarily matching up with the way most incentive programs for the majority of states were structured. So first of all, I think you need to find a way to incent projects that have high investment, especially in manufacturing, because when you look at an ROI calculation, a manufacturing or industrial requirement is going to provide so much more economic impact than I think a lot of communities recognize, and especially a lot of, you know, our elected officials who aren't necessarily familiar with incentives and economic development. So, and when I say find a way to incent high investment projects, the threshold shouldn't be $100 million. I mean, I think we need to bring the balance back to creating jobs that, because when I say high value, I mean, the problem that a lot of states were getting into is that states who were having so much success, they kept, you know, chasing the next thing. So it got to the point where the minimum wage thresholds for most incentive programs were $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. And the reality is not everyone has the ability to have an $80,000 a year job. I mean, a state needs to be sure, and a community needs to be sure, that they're incenting and providing jobs for all of their residents, all of the people in the community of all skill sets. So I think, you know, there needs to be a way, again, to kind of bring some balance back to incentives so that, you know, communities can attract all sorts of projects and not just headquarters and $100 million, you know, either technology or huge manufacturing facilities. And I do think sort of the shift in the economy that we're going to see will likely bring some balance back to projects, but incentives are going to have to mirror that as well.
We had a question come in from Alex Phillips from Burleson, Texas, and his question is, with each state having very different guidelines, do you feel like that is impacting how companies are doing their site searches and how communities are telling their story during this time?
So I have a couple thoughts on that. You know, before all of this, we would say that you would never lead a site selection decision with incentives, right? Incentives can't make a bad site good, blah, blah, blah. You've all heard this, right? They should just be the icing on the cake. So I don't think that's going to change, but I do think we are going to see a shift back to communities who are low-cost leaders, because there is still going to be a focus on workforce, but I think facilities are likely going to just shrink in size a little bit. And so I think this presents a real opportunity for less urban, more rural markets, who may not have the ability to staff a very large facility. So kind of that sweet spot of 50 to 100, 150 employees. I think there's some real opportunity there. I think workers are just by nature going to have to become a little bit more flexible. So, you know, maybe they'll work for a little less pay per hour. Maybe they'll be willing to drive a little further. But I do think there's definitely some opportunity in that space. And I blanked on the second part of the question.
Just how communities are telling their story. Like, do you feel like it will change that?
Yeah. And I, you know, when you think about this business, at the end of the day, this business is about reducing risk, and things change, the economy changes, projects change. I mean, things are just this. Everything is dynamic right now, right? We none of us know what to expect. So I think part of crafting that story is just in this new reality, what are you doing to reduce risk? And I think that's the number one question that you as a community are going to have to answer.
Mm-hmm. We had another question come in from Stephen Pierce, who's in Charlotte. And first he wanted to thank you for sharing your insights, but he's curious to hear if you have any creative ideas for economic developers that may have restricted outbound travel, like their organization in general has restricted travel for business recruitment purposes. And do you have any examples of out of the box or proactive ways that they can target new opportunities for investment outside of the traditional go and visit site consultants, attend the traditional trade shows and conferences and those types of things?
Yeah, I haven't really seen a lot of that yet. I think we're all sort of like coming out of our holes and peeking out and being like, is it okay? So I think from a site visit perspective, some of that is going to be able to be done virtually. But when you get down to final decisions, people are going to have to travel and see some of that stuff in person. From a marketing perspective, I think, this is a relationship business. And so part of it is that sometimes we just need to be together in person to develop those relationships. But until that's possible, I think just, and I've had a lot of economic developers reach out to me and, we'll just get on a video chat and chat for 30 minutes at the end of the day, or we'll have a virtual happy hour. And those aren't creative, but it has been nice to reconnect with people that I would typically see on a more regular basis. And it is nice to make that connection. I do think that, like I said, people are going to have to get just way more strategic about the types of projects and the types of industries that are going to emerge on top after this. And so, again, it's really just about truly understanding what your community can be successful about winning, and then going out and marketing to those consultants that you know have those projects, and maybe even making direct contact with companies. But it's going to have to be a lot more strategic, and you're going to have to be a lot more focused about what you're actually going after and what you think, what industries, what types of companies are going to have real projects after this, and what you can win.
Another question came in and that I thought was really interesting, and it was about, how communities have responded to support their companies during this whole coronavirus pandemic. Do you feel like that response and how a community responded to this will be a factor in future site selection conversations? Like, are companies going to be essentially asking, like, how did you support companies? And, is that going to play a role in how decisions are made?
Yeah, I don't think, from like a monetary support standpoint, I know that's probably not what we're talking about, but I don't think that doesn't seem to be an issue to me. I think it's more going to be that companies, again, are looking to reduce the most amount of risk that they can, especially now when there are so many things that are outside of all of our control. So I think, companies are going to want to go to a place where they know that they're going to have continuity in operations, their employees are going to be safe, and that they have a partner in the community that is sort of marching in step with them. So I think the question will more focus, on safety and what are you doing to support businesses in a way that, again, reduces risk for operations. So I do think that piece of it will become a conversation. But I don't know that it's gonna move the needle all that much, unless you're just one of those communities or regions who is just in the news for doing everything wrong. So I would be prepared though to answer the questions about what your community is doing to reduce risk for your business constituents.
So let's talk about workforce a little bit. And I know workforce has been all the buzz and now everything feels a little bit flipped on its head. Because we did have really low unemployment. Now we have really high unemployment and it's really hard to know like what is happening with unemployment because the numbers lag and there's all kinds of issues with that. And just wondering your perspective, you know, obviously kind of the demographics for workforce are a little bit against us right now. And we know that there's going to be a requirement for increased skills. And certainly delivering low cost labor could potentially be challenging. Can you elaborate a little bit on how you think this workforce is, you know, the demand for low cost labor, how is that all going to shake out, do you think?
You know, once the stimulus payments and things like that sort of go away, and, you know, I know there's been a second round now, and I'm not like debating whether or not that should have happened or what, like, this is not a political discussion, but, you know, once sort of that stuff is not happening anymore, I mean, I think the question that everyone has is like, what is it actually going to take for people to feel okay or be motivated to go back to work? So I think that's why you see, and I know that we were always moving towards more automation, but I think that's why you see sort of this frenzy within corporate organizations of, is there available capital, first of all, to automate? Because it's expensive. Because I think there is a question that there's going to be a certain sector of that unemployed workforce that is just not going to be motivated to go back to work, either because, you know, they found other opportunities during this time, they don't feel safe. I mean, there's going to be a multitude of reasons. And that's sort of why I say, you know, I think we are going to see onshoring in North America, but it's likely we're going to see some in the U.S., but not all. And I think it's going to have to do with sort of that wage arbitrage and what's the sweet spot and what can be filled with automation.
There was another question, Anne, and you kind of talked a little bit about this and alluded to the fact that nothing really creative has come out yet from the industry, but a lot of people are trying to think about how they engage with site consultants with times that people may not be comfortable getting on planes. At least certainly during the summer, which meant for a lot of communities, their fam tours and their market blitzes and those kind of things are kind of put on hold. Have you seen anything from any communities that have done anything virtual that has stood out? Or like you said, are you just kind of waiting to see how people, you know, respond and pivot?
I mean, so early on, one nice thing that Mississippi did was like, hey, will you join this happy hour with us? But we'll also like send you something to have during the happy hour. I mean, so that was kind of fun. Like we all had the same stuff and like matching koozies and like, but you know, I'm also pretty good friends, personal friends with those people too. So, I mean, but that was just sort of a nice touch. And I'm not saying that you need to send us stuff or buy us stuff. That's not the point. It's sort of just like, taking what you know about us on a personal level and just doing something fun. Like everybody's sad. We just want to smile and talk to people and, you know, connect. And so to the extent that we've met each other or, you know, hung out at industry events, I really think it's just going to come down to that kind of personal touch and what you know about the person and doing something thoughtful. And that doesn't necessarily mean spending money. So I don't know. I mean, it's sort of hard to replace the fam tour. And I guess, you know, nobody really knows what's going to happen to all these states and communities' budgets. So that stuff may come back when people feel safe to travel again, and it may not. So again, I think you know, we're just going to have to rely on the relationships that we've already made with people and just be really thoughtful about making connections. But again, like it's such early times. I don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're trying to figure out the same thing. We're certainly starting to begin some experimentation, and we'll share that with the group ourselves, like once we kind of nail down good formats and best practices. But just wanted to pick your brain.
I always really like it when communities or states like share something that's either homegrown in their state or really unique or something they're known for, because then it just helps me make that connection of like, I don't know. That's just something that always sort of sticks in my head. And, you know, again, I know this is about buying stuff, and that's not really the point I'm trying to make. It's just, I think, again, it's just sort of like making those thoughtful connections and finding ways to showcase what's special about your state and community, even when we can't be together in person.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. I think we covered everybody's questions. So, Anne, thank you so much for spending so much time with our crew here on our C2 O'Clock call. We certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.